Welcome to Real Flicks Reviews, like a book club for people who hate reading. This month we're doing Grab Bags, so I picked the movie Saving Private Ryan. We do Berserk 2016, Episode 1, and we bring you movie news. This week we have Jonathan Charney, James Stevens, and Ryan Preston. So here's the description of Saving Private Ryan, 1998. Following the Normandy landing, a group of U.S. soldiers go behind enemy lines to retrieve a paratrooper whose brothers have been killed in action.
Is this really 98?
It is.
Dang.
So
it doesn't feel like that.
So I saw this in theaters. I don't know if Ryan was old enough.
He was like 12.
Maybe 10. So the one thing I remember seeing this movie that really always stuck with me more than anything else was the Normandy landing scene. And as a kid, I was actually laughing, especially at the guy who grabbed his arm after it had been shot off. That, to me as a kid, was literally the funniest part of the whole movie. Yes, I'm slightly twisted. But if you've watched this show, you've kind of get that. Everything about this movie is amazing. The cast on this is perfect. And this was kind of the height of Tom Sizemore's career.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Ryan, what do you think?
Yeah. Well, you know, shoot, even though Sizemore at the time was kind of all jacked up on drugs and whatnot, so to the point where, you know, rumors have it that that Spielberg basically told him he was going to drug test him every day. And even if it was at the end of production, if he failed once, they'd reshoot it with another actor. But there's a lot of interesting things about this movie. Obviously, Normandy is the iconic one.
Yeah.
Because, you know, nobody had ever pulled that together. The really, really interesting part to me, though, is the attention to the feeling.
Yes.
of everything. You know, and by that, to the point where they went out and actually recorded all the arms, you know, all they were used in the movie, they went out and recorded the actual sound of the firearms. You know, so you had like an actual M1 Thompson being shot, and they recorded the sound and they put them all in there, you know, even at distances and things. And it just gave it kind of this really eerie sort of feeling to it. And yeah, I mean, that was insane. And they put it kind of in the context of the history, but then on this sort of fringe of the history, so where they really weren't doing any kind of revisionist sort of stuff, you know.
Yeah. They kind of danced around that. That's the part I probably like the most, is they invented something that never happened, but it fit. It's almost like this could be history.
Yeah,
which was the part I thought I appreciated most, and the narrative I thought was amazing, because a lot of movies the narratives kind of change a little bit depending on what happens. This thing continues through, that the story is very linear in how they do it. It doesn't deviate from the basic plot point, which I was kind of amazed at.
You know, the thing that I got to say is I appreciated the fact that what you were saying is, you know, they didn't change history with it. They brought in a story that wasn't going to affect what happened any different.
Yeah.
And what they did was, and what Ryan is saying is, they brought a realistic feel to it. And for me, this is the first movie that ever gave any justice to our troops in World War II in a realistic way. There was some movies that came out that, you know, they didn't do it any injustice, but they didn't give it such a realistic feel that you can actually feel what it was like to see the carnage that was going on Normandy Beach, D-Day landing, which is one of the biggest reasons why I have no pity for you Nazi bastards.
I think the major problem with these U.S. war movies is you have like the Green Berets that are very like John Wayne was, it's very rah rah America, and well, I don't mind that. It's not as true to the reality of the story. One thing I actually really appreciated, it was not a throwaway scene, but almost, was the scene where had two peoples who sounded like they're speaking German. I did some research. They're speaking Czech or something like that. They weren't German soldiers. They were actually surrendering, and it showed.
Oh, you mean the Lukmano wash for supper?
Yeah. I loved that scene because it showed the fact that Americans were brutal too.
Yeah.
It showed how war changes average people.
Well, there
but, the one part, sorry to cut you off, James, but the one part that really, really hit me hard was I totally forget his name, but the Jewish guy who was stabbed by that
the doctor, right?
No,
he was just the soldier that was kind of giving off him a ton of shit. But anyway, he when he was in that trench, kind of in that same scene, when Vin Diesel's character was kind of packing up all the dirt there, he's that like, "Hey, Finch, look, a Hitler Youth knife." And he, Finch, that was his name. Vin Diesel hands him the knife, and he's like, "I can't remember what he says, but he just kind of sits down, looking at it, and starts shaking, and crying."
Yeah.
And I mean, to me, that was kind of the reality of war. Like you sort of, you know, kind of hold it together as long as you can. But I mean, when those moments hit you, it's hardcore.
And I think on the same lines of that, I love Tom Hanks's character. Like, you don't really learn a whole lot about him until maybe a middle or three quarters away of the movie.
At least three quarters, yeah.
And I love the fact that you have Tom Hanks' explanation and the reason why he doesn't talk about himself, how he's afraid of the person he became.
Yeah.
And that right there to me was another part. What was like, I could imagine somebody in a foxhole, you know, saying, "Is my wife going to like me because the stuff I've seen?" And that's a little details.
One
in this
of the
movie
things
that are so rich.
I really appreciate about this movie is they really throw you in.
Oh yeah.
To it. And I mean, like I'm saying is I cannot over portray how well of a job they did for the D-Day and the Normandy landing. They were shooting him in buckets. Hold on, shut up. the fact that they come out of there and they're seeing that, I mean, these rounds that are just hitting, it doesn't matter. Like, you even have the medic who just saved the guy. He's like, "We just stabilized him." Then ping, right in the head. Guy dies.
Or the people drowning.
And, I mean, I think in that moment, you either, you know, gotta just do what you have to do, or you're going to be stuck on the beach behind the caltrops, basically those big metal things that they were cowering behind, that you either sat there and ended up dying, or you moved forward and hope you made it to a safe spot and then continue on, because those machine guns were just cutting them down.
Oh, yeah, because they had the whole thing, you know, kind of yarded out.
You have to have a change of moment and, like, I got to get shit done.
What I was going to say was, you know, who else thought it was realistic was anybody who was on friggin' Normandy Beach.
Yeah. My grandpa wasn't on Normandy Beach, but he was over in Paris for quite a lot. And, I mean, the guys he met, I've even heard interviews from people who've seen it. There was even a guy I saw recently who was talking about that he was driving one of those boats that he dropped the troops off. And they weren't even hitting the beach all the way. They would just get up there, they drop the gate, you get the hell out of there, and then they turn around, and he was saying that he had to stop a couple times back at the ships because the boat got choked up with people's intestines. Ooh. And he had to stop multiple times and pull them out just to get his ship to move again.
See, that's one of the reasons why everybody here at Real Flix Reviews is a big fan of movies, is when a movie... When a movie's done right, it's the emotional response. Very few movies,
very emotional actually.
Very few movies I can think of off the top of my head have had that effect on people. Fiddler on the Roof is one I've heard people, like, especially people who have been through some of that, they'll watch like the first so many moments and they sit in the theater lobby because they can't finish it. You've got movies like this and Schindler's List. That is amazing if you can somehow imagine, you know, relive a piece of history.
This one, obviously, I mean, I don't think there's anybody that's going to argue this is the best World War II movie that's ever been made. You know, for 100 different reasons. One thing I kind of thought was interesting when I was kind of looking into it was Spielberg really wanted an unknown, just sort of all-American looking kid to play Ryan. And he cast Matt Damon because, you know, he sort of fit the bill and he was a good actor, but he had no idea he was going to win, you know, an Oscar for screenwriting for like the year before for Good Will Hunting.
Yeah.
So next thing you know, this no name kid is just spun into the spotlight right before this movie comes out.
Yeah.
But also that the actors were all sort of meant to go through this sort of really grueling training period to kind of, you know, acclimatize them with the weapons and the you know, the authentic feel of what it was like to be a World War II soldier. But they intentionally left Matt Damon out of it so that the actors would resent him for not going through it, and that they would actually show that on camera.
That was actually something. I was going to bring up. Was one of the parts of the movie, and I keep saying this, but it was always amazing, was you see Matt Damon's character with his guys, and you see the camaraderie and how Matt Damon's like, I'm not going. Tell him I died. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. This is the only family I have left. My only brothers.
And it was like, that's ballsy. That's awesome. And then when they basically said, okay, let's do this, you got to see how Tom Hanks' guys really disliked him, because they're making them go away from their guys, and they're stuck in the middle of nowhere, probably going to die because some yahoo wants to play hero.
Yeah.
And I loved the conflict, the butting the heads, that I was very well done. I don't think it wasn't in your face as much as I think they could have done either.
Yeah.
Well, I love the entire premise of the movie. Like the letter that Lincoln wrote, that's a real letter.
Yeah.
Okay, that was a real thing that that Lincoln wrote to that woman.
Dropping your bomb?
Spilled water all over the place. No. So that sort of reaction to that happening to that mother and her getting, you know, three American flags folded, you know, that kind of already gets you on the side of good idea. But then that moment where you see just like the most selfless kind of thing, you know, like you said, I mean, you know, tell her I was here with the only brothers I had left.
And was it Tom Sizemore whose comment, because I think it was Tom Sizemore and Tom Hanks when he talked about maybe this is a good thing. Maybe at the end of all this, we'll say this is probably the one gleaming light out of all this crappy situation.
Yeah, Tom Hanks right after they took the pillbox that they were shooting.
No, it was when they were sitting on the bridge, kind of waiting for everything to go down. He was talking to Sizemore, Hanks, that maybe this will be the one decent thing we can pull out of all this crazy mess, you know.
Well, I was thinking of the speech that Tom Hanks gave, when they go up and take that spot, and he says, you know, I don't know who this Private Ryan is, but if this earns me the right to go home to my wife, that's what I'm going to do. I think there's also a moment where they all show up, they finally find Ryan, and he's starting to walk away saying, I'm sticking with my guys, and they say, screw you, we just lost two guys. And he turns around and says, what were their names? I think that was a moment where they just went, whoa.
Yeah.
He actually does give a crap, you know? Oh, but, you know, well, I want to bring up one more thing.
I was going to say, he understands what it's like, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, there's the scene where they have the one Nazi that at that part where I'm saying where they took that box, the one surviving Nazi, and they made him dig the graves, and then they let him go. And then you have the other Nazi where, was it Upham? The journalist guy?
Got the German translator.
Yeah. The German translator. Was it Upham?
Yeah.
Okay. Where he's, you know, basically realizes that he doesn't have the guts to pull the gun at that moment and, you know, shoot and protect his friends, and they end up dying. And then the guy, you know, kind of gives him the look, and he just shoots him right there on the spot. And, you know, what I'm bringing up to this point is that they really kept the humanistic part out of the Nazis at this point in this movie. I hadn't seen that changed until he does Band of Brothers, which we did do that as well. You should guys check that out. Where they kept the humanistic feel out of it. And as far as I'm concerned, that's why you have so many video games where the antagonists are Nazis, because of the war crimes that they viewed in this. And they kept that out of this film, which I thought was an interesting choice for it. But I think they would have added like another hour to the film if they had done that.
I think part of the reason why they kind of kept the human side out of the Nazis is because of the, this is from the American standpoint. And at that point in history, all the propaganda, it was, you know, Nazis equal bad. So that's one of the reasons I appreciated was the fact it's 100% from the standpoint of Americans is going, they don't want to be here. I'm going to kill these guys because they dragged my dumb ass here.
Well, actually, it was more the Nazi, the Japanese, not the Nazis.
But you know what I mean, though. It's the fact that they don't want to be here. Tom Hanks even said, you know, he just wants to go home. He wants to go back to speak teaching English.
The only reason why I'm bringing that up is just because, I mean, that's just something that I wasn't going to say it's like propaganda on our side. I just think it's something that wasn't, I guess, relevant to the film. And I mean, like I said, they didn't really show any real of the war crimes that were committed in this film at all.
I think the only time they tried to show humanity was those Czech officers.
Where they shot them?
Yeah, well, the Americans killed. When it got to show the lack of humanity on the American side. Hmm. You know, that's kind of...
Well, they did do that one part with the sniper up in the tower where he was keeping on shooting Vin Diesel, trying to drag out troops to come out and do that. But anyways.
I keep thinking what I was going to give this movie, and literally it's one of the few movies that we've ever done that I wish a 5 was higher than it is. I'd totally give this a 10 out of 10 if our scale went that high. But this movie is a straight 5 out of 5. I saw this movie the day it came out. Haven't seen it since.
Really?
And I remember 99% of this movie going through it. I remember the end was that reporter, a German translator, how as a kid I wanted to kill him. And you still had that feeling of... this dude doesn't get it.
At the end, he didn't really get it.
As an adult, I kind of understand his reasoning behind it a little bit more.
He's a rear in the gear guy.
Exactly.
In the rear.
But no, this is a straight 5 out of 5. This is one of the few movies that I literally think in the annals of time that everybody should see.
All right. Yeah. You know, I agree with that, that everybody should see this one. Just because of how realistic they bring in quite a few of the battle scenes. This one and Band of Brothers are two World War II things that I think they need to be seen. This one, easy 5 out of 5 on my part.
And there's a ton of other movies about World War II. I mean, there's Midway, there's this, that one, you know, but
yeah.
This is the reason I like this the most is this isn't such rah-rah America as this is people slogging it through. It is one of the reasons I like Band of Brothers.
It really shows the just basically what it was like to be an average Joe going into World War II.
So what about you, Ryan?
Average Joe going to, I mean, they had every kind of average Joe.
Yeah.
You know, from Giovanni Ribisi to Sizemore to Opham. And that was pretty much what it was. You know, it wasn't just your tough guys. It was everybody who wanted to serve their country for it. So, like I said before, man, this is the best World War II movie that's ever been made. And that's kind of saying something because there's a couple hundred of those. But I think only Steven Spielberg, and for less than $100 million, I might add. I think the estimated budget was something like $70 million the Normandy taken over 10, just over 10 million to film. But it's a 5 out of 5. I mean, this thing is
amazing.
That's really the only word for it. I mean, the tell me I was a good man scene at the end. I mean, that's up there with Dad, let's have a catch, you know, at the end of Field of Dreams, man. Holy shit. Yeah. Like, I don't think, as far as, like, guys are concerned, like, this is, like, one of those movies that will get you every single time.
So we're going to switch off to our television show. So, very rough transition. Berserk 2016 is a continuation of the television series that came out sometime in the mid-90s. This is pretty much the Dark Knight, Black Knight, whatever you actually call them. And this is Guts after the last one, and
John.
Whatever, and I've been waiting for this since I finished the Box of War. I am not
in like 92.
I am not disappointed. I literally was missing this. I love the I love how it started, because I've watched every one that's came out so far, and I really can't wait.
Well, okay. I got a couple things right off the bat about it. I'm not that big of a fan of the fairy. She kind of does the Asian kind of puppy dingy.
Yeah.
Where they do that. That's a little cartoony for me. The other thing that I kind of was a little bit disturbed by, and these are, I only have three, so it's not that bad, is the sword sound. It just kind of bugs me. And the last thing, now they show what the Black Swordsman looks like in the first episode of the original Berserk. It does not look like the Berserk in this.
No.
He was more built. He was basically like bigger and bulkier. But that's all my issues. I can get past all that. And I think, like you said, I've been looking forward to this, and I am not disappointed by where they're taking it.
I would say the only thing that slightly bugs me is the animation style. I'm not a big fan of the cel-shaded look of the overly CG.
Yeah.
That's always kind of bugged me, just coming from, I'm a big fan of traditional animation.
But I don't think they're throwing too much CG.
No, it irritates me a little bit on certain things.
You call them lazy?
No, because it's not easy to do what they did, I'll be honest. But it still bugs me enough.
Ryan?
It's actually been like a week since I watched it, but if I remember right, they were kind of almost switching back and forth between the animation styles.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, that was kind of odd. Friggin' stick with one. We're all sort of used to the old school animation, or just go straight up digital.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing I kind of agree with you, is that if you're watching this, it's basically like a prerequisite that you've already seen the original Berserk.
Yeah, well, they should have.
So that's kind of what I was gonna say. I didn't. It's been so many years since I've seen the original, and although I kind of liked the story and whatnot, I think I had forgotten, I guess, most everything about the original storyline.
Well, I think
a lot of things were kind of lost on.
Well, you're not paying $90 for the box of war anymore. You can pick it up for $45, $50.
Yeah, it's gotten a lot cheaper.
I plan on going through it again.
It's a lot cheaper.
So this is definitely, from everybody here at Real Flix Reviews, a must watch.
Yeah.
But first, we highly recommend you watch the first one, because by the time you finish that, they'll finish this one.
And you'll actually be like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. So, ladies and gentlemen, we do have a Facebook page, and we have a new challenge for you. Is there a movie you want us to review? If that's the case, we want you to find this episode and make a comment on which movie you think we should review. And the other thing is,
if you say Das Boot, I'll kill you.
And you'll be Das Booted. And we do have an audio podcast. You can find us on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and more. And now we're going to be switching to movie news. And some of this is movie news, and some of this is, thank God this person didn't get cast, was Gwen Stefani said she almost got cast as Angelina Jolie's part in Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Wait, what?
Gwen Stefani.
Are you talking about the singer? Not from a reboot, but the original.
Yeah, yeah. And she was the No Doubt singer, almost got cast as Angelina's part. Literally would have been the worst casting choice ever, because the chemistry between Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt is literally, in my opinion, what made the movie.
Yeah, I actually agree with that.
That's really what does make that movie. yeah, of course. Yeah, I cannot imagine what Gwen Stefani would be like as an actress, for one. You know, look, when it comes to movies, You can have a ton of takes, you know what I mean? So with a shitty performance, you kind of blame the director, you know, unless it's just some, you know, weird voice choice by the actor or something. But when you can do multiple takes, the director ends up kind of getting what he wants. I can't imagine what they were thinking with her. So they were still thinking Brad Pitt?
All I've heard was that, I'm assuming so, which... It just seems so weird, because she vaguely reminds me of the chick who did Tank Girl. And so for me, it would be, they would turn it to a movie that was had comedy action to just a modern version of Tank Girl, but now she's a secret agent.
that's Lori Petty that you're thinking of.
Yeah.
Yes, I know.
But you had to have intense chemistry, you know, to pull off not only the comedy, but I mean, obviously the drama and the sexy of that movie.
Oh yeah, and another, you're gonna add another movie to the pile of dear God, can't this franchise die? Vin Diesel shares news about the new XXX return of Xander Cage.
Didn't they kill him in the second one?
They did. That's why the only reason I'm looking forward to this is the gymnastics they have to play and how do they bring him back.
Yeah.
And
I mean, of course he was on some deep cover assignment.
Oh yeah. Or he was in some sort of coma, or he just walked away, and they didn't want to admit they lost their number one asset. You know,
the original came across Netflix a couple weeks ago, and I decided I was going to watch it again.
Why?
What a silly-ass movie that is.
My favorite scene in the entire movie is at the end scene when he said, here, put this rocket in this car. And so he literally shoots out the headlight, and I'm thinking, finally, a scene in a movie that makes sense. There's no pop-out, you know?
I got a bit of news, and I already mentioned it to John.
Hold on, I have another problem with the original XXX.
Just
when
one?
When he's rotating his bullets around, because he's got the different rounds and whatnot, he doesn't put it one to the left and then cock it. He puts it dead on and then cocks it.
Yeah.
The cocking actually turns the cylinder one more time.
Yeah.
He's shooting blanks. Wait, hold on. Before, just one quick announcement. I think we said it last week or the week before that. Was Batman the Killing Joke is out.
It's amazing.
We're telling you, you've got to watch it. And so, James.
Okay, so I mentioned it to Ryan and John already, but Bobcat Goldthwait's Messed Up Stories is becoming a series. And I don't know if you guys know who that is, but he is, if you don't know who Bobcat is, go look him up. Actually, take some time. He is worth looking up. He's such a character.
Bobcat basically became famous for on two separate occasions for two completely different things. Yeah. One is just a goofy idiot character that nobody really liked, and he got kind of old pretty fast with a goofy voice. But then he started directing and writing independent films and kind of putting them out himself, and those things are kind of amazing. He did a couple of flicks with Robin Williams a few years before he passed, and has done some really out there, interesting things. And anybody who's ever seen Shakes the Clown, if you like that movie, anything Bobcat does is right up your alley.
Yeah, so this one is going to be, each episode, he's going to tell a different story in a different genre, which can go from 70s sci-fi to psychological thrillers, romantic comedy, reality. It's just going to be basically whatever the hell he wants to do.
See, that's going to be awesome.
And I think that is a fantastic thing, and an even better to give it to somebody like Bobcat.
Oh, I can vouch for the fact that this dude has some of the most interesting stories of all time.
I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be coming out. I guess it's on True TV, but it's Bobcat.
He did a 5-hour interview with Joe Rogan on Joe Rogan's podcast. Generally, I don't talk about other people's podcasts on our podcast, but it literally is one that you guys gotta listen to. It literally is one of the best interviews I've ever seen with him. Matter of fact, it's one of the few I've ever seen with him. Another piece of movie news was IMAX second quarter earnings fall. I'm not actually surprised by that, because just like 3D, IMAX is a gimmick.
Yeah, basically every theater now has IMAX capabilities.
But the problem is the screen's not that much bigger.
When they first came out with IMAX,
it was a huge screen.
Yeah, it's a big difference. But now that every theater is basically competing with IMAX in their little mom and pop theaters, which have been bought out by Regal and what's the other big one?
AMC?
Century.
Oh.
So every theater is basically doing IMAX now.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just like 3D. It's a gimmick. The only reason I pay for it is if it happens to be at the time I want to see it, just because movie times generally are not convenient. So I'll pay the more expensive ticket if it's like the perfect time for me.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, people for IMAX, like you said, it is a gimmick, like 3D. And when you've done it a couple of times, the novelty of it wears off.
Yeah.
You know, and then you have this big price jump, you know, between just like sort of your standard matinee or even an evening flick, and then you have this price jump of almost like $7-$8 sometimes, and you're just kind of doing the math in your head, like, eh, for like a slightly bigger screen, I'm going to pay that much extra. Like, yeah, whatever. I'll just see the standard one.
It's like 20 something bucks a ticket up here. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. It's like 25 now, I think.
Yeah. So ladies and gentlemen, next week is James' pick.
All right. So, you know, I was actually going to go with a really easy 5 in a rebuttal to Saving Private Ryan, but then, you know,
I never pick anything that's easy. So
then I actually came across a different film, I think yesterday.
Oh, no.
That just, I had to pick it. So what we are going to be doing is a movie that came out in 2014, actually got released in the States this year, called Rise of the Legend. And that's about all I'm going to say on it. And as far as a TV show, I'm also doing another one that was kind of a surprise to me. I'm picking Stranger Things, which is also on Netflix that you can watch. It's one of their originals. So that's the two picks I'm going to be rolling with.
Awesome.
Okay.
So, ladies and gentlemen, I gave Saving Private Ryan a 5 out of 5. James gave it a 5 out of 5. Ryan gave it a 5 out of 5. We're doing Rise of the Legend.
Yep.
And Stranger Things for next week. And as always, see you next week.